Welcome to the Chronic Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Bing! Take that to the bank. LB. Those are the only letters that matter because the Saints are hemorrhaging linebackers.
Kevin's gonna get his horse steroid.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
All right, it's the Chronic Podcast, sponsored by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They have 136 draft beers on time. Go there because they support us, so you should support them.
And if Jimmy Graham doesn't re-sign, you'll need all of them.
You will. A lot of news today, this week, Saints-related, non-Saints-related. I want to start with Michael Sam from Missouri. Came out. He said he was gay. He's the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Kevin, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on should the Saints take him as a player? I believe that the Saints need to pick him because I want the media circus because it makes training camp more enjoyable. I want the unintentional comedy of Rob Ryan gushing over him when he has a good preseason game. I want all of that. So your thoughts on Mike Sam?
Yeah, I believe we had I can't remember how many weeks ago it was, because I know it was during this season where I'm pretty sure we talked about where a gay player would be, you know, better served playing, and I'm pretty sure we said something like Seattle, we said Frisco, we said New Orleans, we said Miami, we might have said San Diego, I can't be sure.
Not Philadelphia.
not Philadelphia. Not New York. well, in particularly the Jets. But yeah, I mean, if I think he would have to play in a 3-4 since they say he's undersized and he's a tweener anyway. So yeah, I guess he would have to play in a 3-4. And so that's about all I know about that. I mean, you know, formation wise or whatever, or how his skills would translate. I know Andrew was tweeting more about that, and we'll obviously hear more about that. But I think it's a big set of balls on this kid to come out now, before the combine, before the draft. I mean, it would have been a lot easier on him if he'd waited until even after preseason, if he'd waited till, you know, midway through the season, just release like a one sentence press release. Like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, I'm gay.
From what I had read is like he was planning on like doing it after the draft maybe, but he it couldn't wait. Like
It
was like open secret in Missouri, and like the media was being nice to him and like not making the story. But eventually it was like, dude, you got to come out because the media is being nice to you now.
I think I kind of respect on some level. I respect on some level that he's throwing it out there and like letting teams know, like, hey, I'm gay. If this is a problem, then.
Oh yeah, I mean, and he got to do it on his terms anyway. It was still him breaking it, so you know, good on him. Obviously, the scenarios I'm talking about are you know, these like weird hypotheticals in which everything is perfect for him to do whatever he was going to do. But yeah, I mean, you know, we're going to find out. I mean, we're already finding out.
I think Kevin
about where people stand, and it's like, yeah, Andrew. Oh yeah, I'm about to get out my car. Andrew tweeted basically I would think the thoughts of most people. You know, hey, I wish we were at a time where this wasn't a big deal, but it is. I mean, it is, and, you know, hopefully we'll get to a point where it's not. I mean, shit, look at the parallel with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson just won a Super Bowl, and I haven't heard – now, granted, I've avoided ESPN like the fucking
great connection we have.
He does. Are you in a tunnel, hell? I'll have Whopper and
two fries, please. All right,
Cherry's Jubilee, and that's it.
So as we wait for Kevin to reappear, Dave, me and Andrew were talking in the pre-show. I there he goes. There he's back. Dave, I love the media circus. I want the Saints to draft him because it makes the draft more enjoyable to watch because they'll talk about the Saints more. So I want the circus to come to town with Michael Sam. How do you feel about that? Like, I want the Saints to draft him in the fourth or fifth round just because of that, because it'll make draft day more enjoyable. Like, I don't even care if he's any good.
I'm okay with him being on the Saints, of course. I'm okay with the Saints drafting him. I would certainly welcome the media circus. I think the only thing that I probably wouldn't be crazy about is having to listen to the homophobic morons, Saints fans, whether that be on
Canals
or any other website. That would annoy me, and to have to listen to that for at least probably the first year, that would annoy me. But everything else about it is totally fine. It's totally, totally fine.
And me and Andrew were talking about his ceiling, and, you know, we like to speculate. I said his ceiling is Junior Gallette, and his floor is Martez Wilson. Andrew brought a name from the past. C. Grant would be his floor. But the thing is,
like Charles Grant?
No. Remember, it was a linebacker for the Saints. C. Grant. Andrew, did he ever actually play for the Saints? He was always injured.
I think he like tore like seven ACLs in a row and like four training camps.
He was as bad a linebacker pick as Haslett made, and they made a ton of bad picks. Andrew, it's a list of
Courtney Watson, Cedric Hodge, James Allen,
Alfred Fincher.
Oh, Alfred Fincher, Jesus, yeah.
The list is long and it is horrible.
Yeah. And C. Grant was arguably the worst.
Yeah. So, James Allen did have that touchdown in overtime against Tampa that one time though.
I'm trying to look up how tall he is and how much he weighs. I mean, I was listening to maybe NBC Sports Radio or something like that. But yeah, that's what it was. And I was listening to Sean King, and
who looks more like a defensive tackle these days.
He seemed to think that he basically puts Michael Sam sort of in that tweener category where he's too small to be a.
Kevin, the show's not over. You can't turn.
But I've been wrestling, man. My fucking hands are filthy.
What have you been wrestling like a stuffed pig, a dirty pig or something? Jesus.
Kevin is filthy.
Anyway, Sean King seemed to think that he was sort of a tweener, and being the SEC Defensive Player of the Year is great, but that doesn't always necessarily translate over to the NFL. There have been tons and tons and tons of players who have had incredible college careers and who do absolutely nothing in the NFL. Of course, I hope that he does become something, but the point being that he may have a little bit of a tough time just from having nothing to do with his sexual orientation, but just from a physical standpoint and his height and his weight and the position he plays and more so than his sexual orientation and him being gay, that could potentially hurt him. But, I don't really know. I never watched him play. I don't know how tall he is. I don't know how much he weighs.
I saw him eviscerate Florida. That's about my extent of him. He eviscerated Florida, and he made the game-winning play in the Cotton Bowl. That's all I know of him.
Yeah. I mean, it would certainly...
Those are two pretty good data points.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to... I think it's a shame that this is probably true, but I think it probably furthers the gay agenda if he is a good football player as opposed to if he winds up being a bust. I could see.
But what do you mean? I'll tell you what. Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
I mean, I could see people saying, well, see, this is why gays can't play football. You know, gay guys can't be in the NFL. You know, they're never going to make it. They're too effeminate, blah, 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 whatever. stupid shit. I'm too intelligent to put myself in the shoes of a moron, but I'm trying to do so. And that was my impression of that. So I just think that it would help I think it would help potentially other players that are gay maybe want to come out. I think it will help it'll help people that are maybe closed-minded to the whole situation. I think all of that would help if he was actually
a very good
player in the NFL.
And And Andrew, tell me if you think this is crazy, just shoot it down. But I mean, let's be honest. You know, if Martez Wilson would have been able to line up on sides for special teams and been a functional to above average special teams player, he'd probably still have a job with the Saints.
Oh, no question about
it.
So
if
discipline was a major issue with
him. If Sam can be disciplined, and even if he is not an elite pass rusher, even if he's only an average pass rusher, if he can be a special team guy where you can play him on R4 special teams and he can be a solid backup and he's a good locker room guy, he'll probably be able to play for 5 to 7 years.
Oh, I mean, if you're not going to make the starting lineup, you have to be able to play special teams. That's how guys that are picked in the 5th, 6th are undrafted guys. That's how they make the team, is by showing some worth and value on special teams. So, I mean, Kevin Reddick, perfect example of a guy who there's probably better linebackers out there, players that were ready to step into a game immediately and make an impact over him, but they didn't make NFL rosters because they weren't as good on special teams. So he gets to develop at a position while he's contributing on special teams. And in modern day NFL with 53-man rosters, you have to have that. But it's tough, man. I mean, I see both sides. And honestly, as a GM in the NFL, when you're evaluating players, there's no question that Michael Sam comes with an asterisk. And I don't mean that in a negative or necessarily a positive way. It's just an added data point. And when you're a GM and you're sitting there in the 4th round and you're considering about 10 players that have about equal value, and you're deciphering, you're making a snap judgment on which one you need to draft, and you can choose between 9 players that you feel pretty good about that have decent talent that could help your team, and another guy that's gay, that's tough when you consider the media circus, when you consider maybe the, hey, is my locker room ready for this? Do I trust my guys? Do I trust that everyone on the team is going to fall in line? I mean, those are things that you're making in a vacuum and a snap decision in the draft as players are going. So that's a tough decision to make.
It's a great point. Now I'm going to start with you, Kevin. And me and Andrew were talking about this. The media circus for Michael Sam, I say that it's going to – eventually it'll just kind of fade away because it's not going to be the Tebow spectacle. Because Tebow
– Tebow was a train wreck spectacle. Everybody kept waiting for him to fucking fail spectacularly, and he kept fucking winning. And so it just made it like, oh, my God, he's not fucking the football at the 50-yard line. This is spectacular, and he's fucking winning. This is hilarious. And then he fucking ran into New England and got skull-fucked on national television. And then they shipped him out. And then he went to the Jets. And that was a media circus because it was New York. And because the franchise was a fucking train wreck. And you're adding that distraction on top of it. So that was more of a whole train wreck thing in general that he was walking into. And then finally he goes to New England and Belichick's like, ah, fuck it, he ain't playing.
Well, and the thing is with him, ESPN could have a whole sort of layered thing of should he play, should he not. I just don't see the media spectacle for Michael Sam being the same. But Andrew, you, I think, disagree a little bit. You think that it's going to last and it's going to have legs.
I think so. I mean, obviously part of it depends on how much Michael Sam plays into it. And by all accounts, it seems like he made the announcement and then he wants to take a step back and focus on football. So, but I think how much he plays into it, how much he talks in the media, how much he invites those questions will to a certain extent dictate how much the media runs with it. I see pros and cons. Look, the bottom line is I think if any GM could be promised that Michael Sam was going to be a Pro Bowl player.
Kevin, what the fuck are you doing? Are you doing a transmission? Together, what the hell? Man. You're breathing heavy?
I'm heating up my oven so I can put a pizza in so I can eat.
Jesus, it sounds like you're
You're the loudest fucking bachelor I've ever goddamn met in my life.
Yeah, my wife is like, are we at the Italian pie or something? What the fuck is Kevin doing? She can hear what...
And Dave knows a lot of bachelors. But anyway, what I was trying to say was...
Sorry.
I think any GM would, if they could be promised that he would be a Pro Bowl player or, you know, a successful NFL player, they would absolutely draft him because that's a legacy builder. And I think any GM would want to make it work and be the GM that drafted the first gay player that was a success story in the NFL. The problem is, so the pro, I mean, that's the pie in the sky, and that's a very good one. That makes a player, I think, more attractive to draft. The flip side is the disaster of not only does he get cut, let's say he gets cut in training camp, does the whisper of he was cut because he was gay start to happen? Does he come out and say that he was mistreated in the locker room? That's the worst case scenario where the microscope is on your team. And whereas you could just flat out cut a draft pick, a late draft pick, and not worry about it and never have the media circus around you, this could potentially blow up in someone's face. So, it's tough, man. I could see a ballsy GM that really would love to have the media circus and then wants to go for it to almost draft him earlier. And I could see him falling a few rounds or maybe even going undrafted. I mean, I think talent wise, I think he's good enough and his numbers and his statistics in college were awesome. But, you know, like you said, he's a tweener too. So it's hard to say.
Going back to what I said earlier, again, I really want him to be successful in the NFL because if he is, you can't ignore it. You know, if he doesn't do well, it gives NFL teams to ignore him, to not sign him, and it offers the entire league a chance to just brush this under the rug. But if he plays well, if he puts up credible numbers, good numbers, excellent numbers, whatever, you know, you can't say, well, how come he doesn't have a job? How come he's not with some team? Somebody will have to take him. I mean, and that's what I like about – that's what's good about the NFL.
Why do you want him to be successful, Dave? Why? Just for political reasons?
Yeah. I
want him to be successful so that the media will not have to cover every gay player coming out like it's a breaking news and we get a whole week of it. If he's
right.
If he does really well,
yeah,
other players will come out and it'll just end it. But if he bombs, okay, and he doesn't make a roster, then the next player that does it, we got to go through this all again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. I just would rather him be successful and let's just get it out in the open and be done with it so the media can move on to something else.
You guys really feel like the NFL needs a successful gay player.
I think the world needs to be more tolerant and more accepting of all gays across the board. And I it's sad.
Yeah, I just don't know if the NFL is necessarily has to be the vessel for that.
No, I don't think the NFL
is the last one. I think that in other aspects of life, being gay is accepted. I think professional sports with all these men, I think they're the one of the last dominoes to fall.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's true.
I think it's true. I just, like, and I know Andrew was kind of going in back and forth and about how he doesn't really care and he doesn't want the meat. I don't want all my sports channels covering this 24 hours a day. For as many, you know, they're going to cover it into next week probably. And I just, like, it was interesting for about 35 minutes for me on Sunday. After that, I'm tired of listening to it. And I want him to be successful so that it's not news anymore. For me, personally, selfishly, because I don't want to hear.
You can be gay and you can be a doctor. You can be gay and you can be a lawyer. You can be gay, you can now be in the army. You can be gay and you can work for the government. You can be gay and you can be president. But you can't be gay and play in the fucking NFL?
No, you can.
What is that about?
You can. I want him to be so that ESPN doesn't cover it like a presidential address.
But maybe this guy can. I mean, I just don't see – you know what I'm saying? Like maybe it'll be some other gay guy that's amazing. I mean, for all we know, there was already a gay player that didn't come out.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed. Guaranteed there are gay – I guarantee you there are gay fucking Pro Bowlers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, guaranteed. And I tell you what, Drew McGarry wrote a great fucking piece this past week saying, you know what? It's fucking ballsy and brave that Michael Sam came out at the time he did. But you know what? There are fucking gay players right now that could step up and say, hey, you know what? I'm fucking gay. I've been in this league 4, 5, 6 years. A couple of my fucking teammates have known, haven't had a single issue. I've done my thing. And you know what? And again, I go to this whole preferably, so that way it's the best story to help prove that it doesn't fucking matter. Best fucking case scenario would be a guy, a fucking pro bowler, a guy that's consistently talked about, and you see his highlights, whoever. And he just comes up and says, you know what? I'd been afraid for a while, you know, I just wanted to keep it quiet and keep it private, but this college kid fucking stood up and he shouldn't have to stand alone on this. And so.
And I wish that somebody would do that. I think
right.
It's about time.
That's a great question. And I'll start with you, Dave. Will that happen?
I think probably, since it hasn't happened yet, I think that anybody who's even considering it is probably going to maybe take a wait and see attitude to see what does happen with Michael Sam and whether he gets drafted and what happens as his first season. Should it happen? Yeah, absolutely. I really wish that one or two or a handful or however many players that are in the NFL currently that are gay. And the higher profile, the better. The more accomplished, the better. But I do wish that that somebody like that would now use Michael Sam as a jumping off point and say, you know what? If this young kid has enough balls to come out before he's even drafted to potentially
cost himself millions.
Exactly. To potentially cost himself a lot of money and draft position and all that stuff. If this young kid is ballsy enough to do this, and I have been in the league for this long, and I am established, and I'm a pro bowler, then what's my problem? Why can't I come out?
Andrew, I'm going to say, Andrew, will another gay player, or two, or have it, will it happen before the season starts, you think?
I think I'm with Dave. I think, you know, it's hard to be, every individual is different. So, you know, you don't know how any gay player would react to Michael Sam. And I agree that on some level, there's probably going to be a wait and see for how things play out, how the league reacts to it, how the locker room reacts to it after the player's drafted. So, it might take a while.
Really, I'm waiting for Jonathan Vilma to come out of the closet.
I wish like 4 or 5 or 6 players would come out, because then the media would just get so exhausted covering it.
Exactly. That would be the best case.
We don't
right.
care anymore.
Because then you wouldn't even know. It's like you're at a gunfight in the OK Corral and you got one guy in front of you. You can shoot him, but you got 10 guys in front of you. You don't know where to shoot first.
Yeah.
I say this a little bit in jest, but I think my hatred for the Atlanta Falcons trumps hoping that equality works itself out in the U.S. So if Michael Sam gets drafted in the second round by the Falcons, then I don't want any – I mean, then it's like awful.
Well,
case scenario.
Then it's not racial hatred that you want him to fail. You just want him to fail because he's in Atlanta.
Well, yeah, but then the media just like, oh, what a great organization, the Atlanta.
Oh,
could
God.
You imagine how awful that would be?
Oh, no, that's true. Ugh, man.
I mean, that would set equality back a century.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, Kevin, Michael Sam coming out and announcing he was gay, I was like, eh, that's interesting, and I shrugged. But something happened today that shocked me. I was driving home, and on the NFL Network, they announced Cleveland had fired everybody in their front office after they hired a coach. I don't know what the fuck that's about. But they hired –
Browns move.
They hired Bill Kuharik. And if you're – what would you say, Kevin, if you're under – if you're over 30, you know who Bill Kuharik is? I would say that's
– No, I didn't fucking know who he was. I mean, you had to tell me pre-show who the hell he was, and I thought he was dead.
So maybe like 35. He is.
I'm 33. I remember Billy Kay well.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No. 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 I think if you're a more learned individual or a more attentive individual, yeah, I would say if you're maybe over the age of maybe 28.
All right. So Andrew, if people that are like, I don't know, who's Bill Kuharik? Explain to the people how bad Bill Kuharik was as a general.
I mean, this doesn't even dig that far back into my memory. I mean, we were teenagers. I mean, this was in late high school or maybe even the beginning of college. I mean, this was the mid to late 90s. So, but yeah, Billy Kuharik was basically a GM for the Saints for a long time. He was in the organization. He was one of Tom Benson's pawns. And, when Jim Mora got fired, they basically cleaned house, and Billy Kuharik did he hire Ditka pro bono, didn't he?
Yeah.
See, he was kind of off the books. Yeah, Bono. He was kind of off the books, but he went ahead and hired Ditka he kind of presented Ditka to Benson anyway, and so Benson rewarded him by giving him the GM job, and I mean, if you were to give me five, if you were and give me a chance to list five names in the history of Saints football that were just inept and in over their head, Kuharik is definitely in the top five, and he may even top the list. But he was just an atrocity of a GM, and I think his lack of an ability to stand up to Ditka in the Ricky Williams trade was potentially the most devastating move to the franchise in history, or one of.
Yeah, he probably – this is old-timers are probably listening. If you know the 70s
– I mean, his comb-over enough is a crime against humanity.
Vic Swank was a terrible GM for the Saints. He was in the 60s and 70s. Steve Rosenblum, the Saints hired him as a favor to his dad. His dad, Sidney, used to own the Colts and the Rams before Georgia Frontieri – married him and he drowned in circumstances. But Kuharik was pretty bad. Imagine Mickey Loomis, if Mickey Loomis never had a plan, always overreacted, made panic signings, and never, ever was aggressive. That would be Bill Kuharik. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. He was always like kind of a coward.
Yeah, so, like, Dave, this hire is so bad. If you were a Cleveland Browns fan, would you be like, I stop being a fan, or do you take a break for a while? Like, if your favorite team just does something so horrible that you can't stomach it. Like,
if you're a Cleveland Browns fan and you're still a Cleveland Browns fan, I would say at this point you're still a Cleveland Browns fan, you're probably in it for the long haul. I think you would have quit a long time ago. I don't think this would have been the straw that breaks the camel's back. To realistically answer your question, yeah. I would shoot myself if I was a Browns fan. I mean, not even having to do it this high.
Dave advocating a bullet to the head.
I mean, I just think it's crazy that you hire a coach and then you get rid of everyone else around it. I mean, that just seems so ass backwards. That would really be like hiring an offensive or a defensive coordinator before you even hire the coach, and you say, here you go, you have to work with this guy.
The fact that Bernie Kosar in his current state is a better option at quarterback for them than anything they have on the roster tells you all you need to know.
I mean, they're just hapless. I mean, they're just losers. I don't know whether it comes from the ownership. I really do not follow the Browns much.
Well, the owner's a criminal, so.
Well, I mean, it's at some point this has to trickle down from somewhere, and wherever it's trickling down from, that's the person who needs to go. I mean, he if it's the owner, and I was a Browns fan, and the owner was responsible for making all these decisions, I would start a Kickstarter fund or something, or petition the White House and try to get 100,000 signatures. I mean, I would just try to do something, because as long as whoever is in charge and whoever's making all of these decisions for the course of however long it's been that they've been bad, I mean, it's just I just don't see it getting any better for them. I just really don't.
Would it be more shocking to you, Ralph, if Billy Kuharik had success with the Browns in the front office or would that be more shocking to you, or was Carl Smith's post Saints success with USC quarterbacks more was that more of a shock?
Pugh Herrick would be more of a shock, and I'll let everybody take a shot at this answering this. I think Pugh Herrick, because Carl Smith, I mean, you can be a mediocre coach or whatever, and you can stumble on to having a good player or whatever. I mean, I remember, who was that guy, Chris Palmer? He got to be head coaches a bunch of places because he was quarterback coach for Bill Parcells for 10 minutes with Drew Bledsoe when Drew Bledsoe was younger, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can, like, the quarterback coach for the Saints, Lombardi, we don't know if he's any good. He got an offensive coordinator job with the Lions, but we don't know if he's any good. You don't know if he can run an offense, but because he was on
the Lions head, hired him, so he's probably not very good at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, but Pugh Herrick has a track record of being awful at picking players. So I'll be stunned if Pugh Herrick turns it around and gets Cleveland winning in the next 2 years. Anybody else? Kevin, what would you say to that?
Nah, I'd say Carl Smith and again, it's probably more of a bias with me because, again, I had no effing clue who Kuharik is. And
well, Carl Smith predates Kuharik.
Yeah, but for some reason, I know fucking Carl Smith just because I don't know. I guess maybe I'd heard Buddy D and the callers too, Buddy D, just like, Carl Smith! Carl Smith here! You know, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, Carl.
That was classic.
Carl. All right. So before we get to – well, let's get to our first off-season position of the season, the podcast. We do by position. So we'll start with quarterback for the Saints. Dave, I'll start with you. There's been a clamor on Twitter and other places that the Saints need to draft a backup quarterback, Andy Murray, Mettenberger, whoever you choose in the second, third, fourth round. Do you think the Saints should start looking at a backup quarterback to replace Breeze?
Say Andy Murray?
What?
Are you
Wait, what? Did he? What?
I think he got cut off.
Oh. Will the Saints, what are they going to do for we're at quarterback? Are they going to go backup quarterback to replace Breeze? Are they going to do that high in the draft, second, third, fourth round?
No, I don't think so. I think we're still a little Drew is what, 28? I mean, not 28. No, Drew is 30, like, what, 35?
34.
36? Yeah, I mean, I think I think Drew's probably got at least 4 or 5 more years. And that being the case, I think it's a little too early to draft somebody that high and to have him just sit on the bench for 3, 4, 5 years. You know, I think this is something the Saints do in another year or two. But right now, I think it's a little too early.
Kevin?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the fucking question? I mean, dude. Dude, I thought I made clear that when we were doing these position things, not to include me too much because again, you said quarterback, yeah, Drew Brees is still good.
Okay,
that's the extent of my fucking analysis.
All right.
Drew Brees is still like good. He throws football good.
I like the honesty, Sean Orleans.
Yeah, Sean Orleans.
I'm nothing if not brutally honest. Yes.
Andrew,
don't hurt me, Sean. Don't hurt me.
I mean, it's gonna be it's Ryan Griffin sort of job to lose. They're not doing anything significant at backup quarterback in the draft, Andrew.
No, I don't think so. But I think they will bring back Luke McCown. I don't think they're just gonna give the job to Griffin. I think he'll have to earn it, and I don't see any reason why McCown wouldn't come back and at least compete in camp. And I think if they feel good about Griffin and how he performs, then yes, he'll get the backup job and McCown will be done, but I think they like McCown. They've been impressed with what he's done, and so I mean, look what his brother just did in the later stages of his career. I think, you know, it's possible for quarterbacks in their early 30s to catch on with the team, come in as a backup, and sometimes play well. I mean, Rich Gannon did it later in his career, kind of caught fire. Yeah. So Kurt Warner later in his career. So, I mean, it happens. I'm not saying Luke McCown's on that level, but I think the organization likes him. He knows the playbook. He has good relationships with the staff. So I think it's completely 50-50 between those two.
Yeah, and Dave, I saw on Canal Street Chronicles that Dave introduced me to a fantastic site. It's called Over the Cap.
Yeah, you didn't know about that?
I didn't know about that. And I'd gone to another site that was similar, but they don't let you, like, Sports for back. Over the Cap, you can, like, actually, like, manipulate the Saints cap and cut guys and restructure and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, restructuring doesn't really help them with Drew Brees, though. Like,
they could restructure him this year. Yeah, it would just make the cap situation worse in future years. They really – the benefit of the restructure is going to be the following season, I think. I mean, the way I looked at it mathematically, I believe that a 2015 restructure will bear its fruits a lot more, because at that point, Breeze's cap number raises, I think, $8 million next year. So I think the real fruit of that labor will be had in 2015 when they can kind of get more cap room. So I don't think it's going to happen this season.
And, I mean, Dave thought – you think 4 or 5 more years. But, I mean, do you agree with – I mean, how many prime years, Kevin, do you think Drew Brees has?
Two.
Oh, just two.
Well, I mean, look. Well, here's the thing, though. Would you – okay, prime, great Drew Brees, 2 years. After that, would you be willing to take anywhere from – would you be willing to take above average Drew Brees?
Yeah, but you're saying
– Not for the price they're paying.
well, I mean, that's – well, then that's why fucking people do contracts, man. I mean, technically you're paying them – I mean, shit, technically you're paying them for what they've done, and with the estimation that they're going to do something still good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I know that. But what I'm saying is, look, I just go back to the fucking math that I did. I don't remember how many weeks ago it was, but it was when he finally got into the top five of all-time passing yards. And basically, it was like if he threw for at least 4,000, he'll end up the all-time leader in yardage if he stays and plays till he's 40. So it was something like that. So I just want him to stay and play till he's 40.
Shit, man. If he continues to get hit as much as he did last season, he's 2 years, it may be an overstatement.
You know, the thing is, history says that quarterbacks at 30, once a quarterback hits 38, they fall off a cliff. So, I mean, I think that means you got – what, he's 34, 30. So you got – I think you can squeeze out I think he's got – if he's not injured, I think he'll have three – I think – I disagree with Kevin Slate. I think he'll have three more prime years. But if Kevin, if you're right and he has two more elite years left, that makes the contract situation kind of difficult if they don't stretch him out going into that fifth year.
Well, fortunately for us, Kevin's never right.
It is true.
Right, a couple of times.
Speaking of Kevin, you made your wrestling debut.
Yeah, big time. Full show.
I'm tempted to post it as a fan shout on Canal Street Chronicles.
Go ahead.
Did you? Was the random toddler that's at your practices of the video that you send us? Was he at the wrestling match? Was he wandering around the ring?
No, he was not. He was not wandering around the wrestling ring. He was upstairs in the locker area being attended to by responsible adults. Yeah, and hopefully taking a nap. Hopefully he came down from a sugar high.
Just to give a recap of Kevin's wrestling debut.
Yeah, did you?
Can correct me if I'm wrong at any point in this, Kevin. I mean, but you were playing the manager of one of the wrestlers.
Yes.
And you're a bad guy, so you're not you're not supposed to be liked at all.
Yeah.
And, toward the end of, you know, you're kind of moving around and walking around the ring and not necessarily taking part in the fight, but you're definitely active in and around the ring while the while the match is going on, and then finally at the end, Kevin gets, or sorry, Sean Orleans gets involved and does get into the ring and puts his foot on the guy's neck for a little bit there. How does that feel, huh? And and that's Kevin's wrestling debut.
Well, actually, there is video of me actually in a match later that evening. I did actually get into ring again.
That, though.
Did you win? Did you incite the crowd?
God, no.
Did you get to crack a chair over somebody's head?
No. Here's the thing. They were going to do a match for a belt called the Battle Royal Championship. And they didn't have enough – sadly, they didn't have enough guys to do a Battle Royal. So they just made it like an open challenge to multiple people. And I was like, oh, hell, I'm going to do this. And so I took off my coat. I kept my scarf on.
Nice.
And – oh, yeah. Everybody –
nothing shuts through in the heart of your opponent like a scarf.
No. Everybody hates the scarf. The scarf plays. The scarf is money. That's the moneymaker. So the ref is like, you're going to wrestle with that? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to wrestle with that on. And both wrestlers are kind of like smiling at me or whatever. So I took a swing and hit one of the guys and, you know, knocked him back. And he was kind of stunned. And so I started doing like a celebration dance, threw my arms up and was like, yeah, take that. And I backed up into the other guy who was sort of like standing behind me like waiting. And I turned around all like, oh, shit. And he hit me with a Street Fighter II. He hit me with a Hadouken, and I flew back about 5 or 6 feet, and he pinned me. And then he tried to help me up. I shoved him off and was like, I was not ready. Well, then the other guy comes up from behind and rolls me over, and he gets a 3 count on me. Everybody in the crowd went nuts and loved it. They loved it. So, you know.
Because they hate the scarf.
Let me tell you. I trashed Budweiser.
Well, you don't do that in Missouri.
Well, fuck them. It's a terrible beer. I trash-talked their pizza, which really is shitty.
Well,
it's terrible.
I mean, did you dog Dale?
Provel is terrible. Oh, and David Freeze, I trash talked him because he's a drunk and he split for more money because he's smarter and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I basically just said everybody in Missouri is mediocre and I'm not and all this other kind of stuff. And it was like, I only thought I was talking for like two and a half minutes. No, it turns out I was talking for 5 minutes, but everybody fucking hated me.
So it's kind of like a podcast.
Yeah, I was about to say, are you saying that you went on and on and on and on and didn't realize it? Oh, shocker.
Well, fuck you very much, Dave.
Zeke. And by the way, thank you for being such a wonderful ambassador for New Orleans there in Missouri. There's a small town now in Missouri that will never come and visit New Orleans because of Kevin.
Hopefully.
Exactly. I told them, you know, you clowns are having your Mardi Gras in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I saw
that. 2 or 3 weeks. I said, your Mardi Gras is essentially a block party to us.
Do they really have a Mardi Gras in St. Louis?
Oh yeah, it's in like one little neighborhood of the city.
Oh my god!
And it's one day, it's 1 or 2 days, and that's really it. And they're like, "Woo, we're drinking, we're having fun, ha!" And I'm like, "Yeah, this is really stupid."
All right. Probably makes Mardi Gras in Galveston sound appealing. All right, we got Twitter questions. We got some
Twitter questions.
We got a weird question. I'll start out with a really weird one.
140 characters.
How would Michael Sam, and this is for you, Andrew, how would Michael Sam fit into the Canal Street Chronicles podcast locker room? Would he be a distraction for you? My wife said, I don't care if he's gay, his teeth are fucking hideous. His mouth looks like a grenade exploded in it.
I think some people misunderstand where I'm coming from on this. I don't give a shit that he's gay. I could care less. I have gay friends.
Classic misdirection.
Yeah. I have the token gay friends. No, seriously, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me that there's a gay player in the NFL. It doesn't matter to me what he does in his bedroom. Is he good on the football field? Could he help the team? I mean, as a Saints player, that's all I care about.
You're just
– I would welcome him on our podcast. In fact – the number of hits and the number of people listening to this podcast would probably multiply by 1,000. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but take it.
Suck up our bandwidth until he heard my wife ask him why doesn't he have braces.
I'm sure the NFL has a dental plan.
They do.
Because he couldn't afford them. I'm reading about all the crap about his family. It seems like he did not have a very.
Can we get on that? Can we get Michael Sam on the podcast? That would be amazing.
I'm pretty sure he's busy doing interviews with legitimate media like the New York Times.
He's waiting for Bob Costas's pink eye to cure.
Oh yeah. He's waiting for legitimate media. He's waiting for the Today Show to fucking call him. Get the fuck out of here with that legitimate media shit.
I said the New York Times. I didn't say Today Show. You said that, you Hoda and Kathy fanboy, you.
Let's see.
I am jealous of them because I would love to get paid to get drunk.
Kevin, here's a question for you. Which Saints coach will awkwardly say no homo in front of Michael Sam after we draft him?
Rob Ryan, Jesus Christ. Man, if the question is anything to do with Michael Sam, what coach, Rob Ryan?
What?
I don't care what the I don't care. I don't care if it's that. If it's having to say things that Thomas Morstead's gonna pop his head and be like phrasing, anything like that. I don't care if it's something like, what coach do you think is secretly most likely to sit and chat like fucking color patterns or whatever sort of stereotypical gay character shit with Michael Sam? The answer is still Rob Ryan. if it's like, all right, take Michael Sam out and play fucking darts or whatever with him, Rob Ryan. Take him to go get shots.
What did you expect us to say? Pete Carmichael Jr.?
Yeah, like what?
It's the guy you least expect.
Billy New.
Yeah.
Billy New.
Fred McAfee, definitely.
Yeah. Joe Vitt for sure.
You know.
Hey, you leave Joe Vitt alone.
Apparently, Joe Vitt and Jay Glazer almost got into a fight. I read that.
Joe Glazer would kick Joe Vitt's ass.
I know he would.
When was this?
I don't know. It was on. It was in a GQ article about Jay Glazer that Drew McGarry had written.
I read that article. I didn't see anything about Joe Vitt. Maybe I didn't read the full article.
Yeah. It was like the outtakes. It was like a sidebar or something. Yeah, Zach on Rice that says, Saints forecast, do I have a bucket? Do you have a bucket I can borrow? That's probably an insult that I don't understand.
Because he wants to vomit, maybe.
Probably.
Whatever.
Icy Hot tweeting ridiculous questions about Drew Brees getting traded to San Diego. That's absolute fact. It was on TMZ. The Chargers are going to run the two quarterback system with Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees. They're going to combine their families. Phillip Rivers has got like 9 kids, and Drew Brees is going to have 4. They're going to be the Rivers bunch, and it's going to be on the Learning
Channel. Breezy Rivers.
Yeah, Breeze. It's going to be the Breezy Rivers bunch. It's going to be on the Learning Channel. It's going to be big. So, Bobby Griffin is your new quarterback in 2014.
It's going to be Phillip and Drew plus 15.
I've got a few Twitter questions, too.
Fire.
Well, one we're not going to answer because just out of principle. This one's from at Witzer.
Are we sure?
Yes, and I'll explain why. This one is from at Witzerland. He wants to know what's our most pressing need on defense. And then he asks, can we expect an improvement in Rex's second season as defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I'm not answering that.
Moving on. If you don't even know the goddamn name of our defensive coordinator, you don't deserve a response to your question. He also asked what Kirby's trade value is. And I don't even know. Who's Kirby? Who the hell? Is he talking about the Saints? Is this guy a Jets fan? Did he
Kiri. Kiri. I think he might be talking about Kiri.
Oh, okay. We're moving on.
He has no trade value. He had a nice game against Seattle and a nice game against the Eagles. He has no trade value.
See, Dave is spoiled. He's got so many people that are coming on Connect Street Chronicles that he can afford to piss two or three of them off because his readership won't be effective. But, man, I mean, Saints Nation, we can't treat our people like that.
I'm not trying to treat people weird, but like, I want there to be a level of intelligent fan discussion that we have. And
Sports Cajun asked, did Q Herrick write his own Wikipedia entry? I looked at it. The answer is yes. Here's a question from Angry Hudat. This is for you, Andrew. Now that Q Herrick is running the Browns, what are the odds that he trades the entire draft for Mark Ingram?
Sign me up. Sign me up immediately. I think the odds are 50-50. I mean, hell, if Richardson got – I mean, if the Browns were able to milk what they were able to milk for Richardson, I mean, God.
What the hell – Kevin, what the hell would they have to done to get fired after they hired the coach? I mean, the front office, you could say, well, they didn't they might have not done so well last year drafting players that are in free agency was kind of mediocre. But as far as trading – Trent Richardson and getting a one for him and setting up their draft. They got, I think they have 12 picks in the draft this year. Like, they've set it up perfectly. What did Mike Lombardi and the other guy have to do to get fired? Like, were they walking around the facility with no pants on? Like,
I'm thinking essentially it's that. And they probably made a cat call at Jimmy Haslam's wife.
I mean,
or Guma, if he's really tied up to the mob. And those were my last words, folks. I'm going to be found in a ditch tomorrow. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they just
maybe they had a Hindu Vegas trip.
Ooh. Cajun Sports Cajun also said, "How did Johnny Weir get Ralph's jacket? He has a speed skater and a giant pink glittered jacket." And I will have you know that
he stole your fucking jacket, man.
I look good in pink. I'll have you know.
That jacket, I tell you what, Johnny Weir, I gotta be honest, that guy is fucking weird and he's out there, but you know what? He embraces it and it's part of his character. It is who he is.
You know, he's moving merchandise somewhere.
Exactly. And hey, he's hanging out with Tara Lipinski, so good on him.
Dave.
Cheap fabric and dim lighting. That's how you move merchandise.
We got a couple more questions and then we can get out of here. Any chance of getting Pierre the Pelican's old head and putting it on Bobby Hebert? That's from Kim.
It would certainly be an improvement. I just found out that Pierre the Pelican was
the Pelicans 86. Have gotten more publicity over Pierre the Pelican breaking his nose than they have all year.
Yeah. It's pathetic.
I think that was the best thing about the team. I don't know why they got rid of him.
I agree. Well said.
That and King Cake Baby, they just scare children. That's what they do. All right. Andrew, this is a good question for you. This is from Ryan Berger. What are the odds Rob Ryan Josh Hillifies Michael Sam if the Saints draft him, meaning he just uses Sam for everything?
Am I supposed to answer that seriously?
You're going to answer it any way you want.
I mean, he doesn't coach special teams or offense, so, and I don't think he can play safety, so.
You don't know that.
Yeah, true, true. No, I don't know. I don't think Michael Sam's coming to the Saints. I'm going to throw it out there.
Oh, man. The fun thing about Rob Ryan, though, is he has – he gives each defensive player, he gives them an animal name. They have theme music. The Michael Sam possibilities for that could lead to very bad problems with HR.
Careful now.
It could be.
I got one more question.
Okay, go.
It's a legitimate one, and it comes from at Bitter 1-1. He's tired of all the just pay the man crap in regards to Jimmy Graham. People simply don't pay attention to the Saints cap situation. Well, please break down please break down realistically what he could get paid per year that would still allow for free agents and draft pick signing. Now, first of all, I agree with him that we can't just pay Jimmy Graham a gazillion dollars and mortgage the future of the team. But that being said, I think when people are saying just pay the man, if it was me that was saying that, what I would mean by that, I don't mean give him all the money. I mean give the guy a goddamn long-term contract. Don't do this bullshit franchise tag shit. You know, don't try to screw him out of a wide receiver franchise tag instead of a tight end franchise tag. So when I say something like just pay the man, that's what I mean. Like, do the respectable thing. He's done well for the Saints. He's done well for the team. You know, don't drag him along. It's the same thing with Drew Brees. Like, I can't believe that they let it go beyond, you know, and they let it go that long. Let's get it out of the way. Get it done. It should have been done last year. Just like when it came with Drew Brees, it should have been done last year.
These agents that represent these players are, I mean, they milk every dollar they can out of the cap.
I understand
that's the whole point of a long-term deal is it's hard. It's hard to come up with an agreement because the expectations and the demands are they start high and they start unrealistic. And you got to meet somewhere in the middle. But when the team is offering a contract, if the reports that were out on Drew Brees, for the record, if the reports that were out were true about what the Saints were offering Brees and Brees was balking at those offers – and I mean, really, it was over like $5 million over 6 years. I mean, I know that sounds like a lot to us, but to Drew Brees, it was a drop in the bucket, man. And like for him to let it kind of go on that long for that amount of money when he was getting what I felt was a fair offer, I think it was mishandled by Brees' brass. So it's the same people representing Graham, and I think if the Saints offer him a fair contract and he's like, no, pay me Calvin Johnson money. Or, I mean, you know, then they're at an impasse. And so then just pay the man is not realistic if they're offering him a fair contract that he's not taking.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve Calvin Johnson money. Nobody deserves Calvin Johnson money.
He deserves Gronkowski money, and that's 6 years. Oh. $50 million.
The Saints
will offer him that, don't you?
Yeah. Yes. He wants to know what we think realistically he could get paid per year. I think you're looking at $10.5 to $11.5 million per year.
I think $10 million per year.
I think probably slightly less, maybe. I probably think it'll probably be about 5 or 6 years for about $55 million and 20.
Six years for 55, you mean?
Probably like 6 years for 55, but like.
A Gronkowski was 6 for $53 million.
I thought Gronkowski was 6.
More than Gronkowski.
So you might be right. No, you might. I thought it was less than. So probably richest, like I'm gonna say 6 for $60 million.
Gronkowski got the richest deal in NFL history for a tight end, 6 years, $53 million in 2012. So based on those numbers alone, I mean, I think Graham's probably looking at 6 years, $58 million.
Okay.
With a larger guarantee and a larger
signing. How much did Gronkowski get guaranteed, though?
It was $8 million signing bonus and like $11.5 million guaranteed, something like that.
Whew, so that's – it's tough, though, when you do the – and we'll get into it obviously. It's tough to fit that contract under the cap even when you start cutting Will Smith and Lance Moore and Roman Harper.
Well, I think here's the thing. Like, if you look at it from this vantage point, it's going to be a lot less than what the franchise tag would be for 1 year because if he's signing – let's say he's signing a six-year $58 million deal, and let's say that simple math, let's just say $12 million of that is a signing bonus – so that means $2 million per year. But usually in the first year of the deal, they don't give you that much salary. So let's just say they give him $2 million salary and his prorated cap hit from the signing bonus is another $2 million. That means you would count about $4 million against the cap in year one. So a long-term deal like that, while over the life of the deal gets more and more expensive each year, the first year it's actually going to be a lot less expensive than franchise tagging him.
Wow. Oh, okay.
In terms of the cap.
So you're saying, Andrew, they can do it. They can do a deal, and they can do a deal, and they might have a lot of flexibility to go out
in
maybe get
one. Yeah.
Well, get one.
Well, they have to be careful about what they offer free agents because, you know, obviously if they give them backloaded deals, Jimmy Graham and Drew Brees' contracts inflate over time too.
Yeah.
So it's not that simple. But, yes, in year one, they would get some cap flexibility.
Well, they get $9 million extra next year because of the CBS TV deal. The cap's going to go up $9 right. million in 2015, so that helps.
Graham needs to be paid with the best – among the best of the wide receivers. You can't put him in the tight end category. Whether we're talking about the franchise tag or whether we're just talking about a regular long-term deal, all of his numbers, all of his stats put him at the top or near the top of all of the major categories.
Well, that's – so, Dave, if you're making that argument, that's the argument that Graham's brass is going to be, and that's where they're going to be at an impasse because – 6 years, $58 million is about what Gronkowski made. It's about the – I mean, it's the best deal in NFL history for a tight end. But if you're starting to talk about real receiver money,
yes,
then we're talking about $20 million more than that.
So be it.
But the Saints can't afford that. That starts to get –
which is why they're going to franchise tag him.
I don't know. I mean, do you think – Kevin, do you think
if Jimmy Graham hits the open market, don't you think that somebody is going to pay him that? Don't you think somebody's going to pay him as much as somebody like Andre Johnson, you know, anybody like
Cleveland.
That?
Cleveland will
possibly, but I mean that's you know, I mean,
but here's
why we're going to see the Saints franchise tag.
Here's the thing though, Kevin, is let's say the Saints say they argue and the Saints say, look, we'll give you 6 years and $60 million, so you're gonna make $10 million a year and we're gonna give you $25 million guaranteed. If he's looking for the wide receiver money like Dave thinks he wants and deserves, that means he wants 80-90 million. So is he going to roll the dice with all his injury problems and say, I'm going to play on the one-year franchise tag that at a tight end level, and I'm going to give up – and Kevin just dropped out.
And look what happened to Gronkowski, by the way.
And I'm going to roll the dice, and I'm gonna put that $25 million guarantee. I'm going to roll that on the line. I mean, do you think Jimmy Graham, Dave, would do that?
He doesn't really have a choice, does he? It's either accept the franchise tag or sit out the season, is it not?
Well, no, I'm saying he could take the contract offer that the Saints come to if they want to make him the highest paid tight end in history.
He's not going to sit out the season. That won't happen.
No, he's not going to. We talked about this when we were going through this with Drew, and I mean, I think for any NFL player to sit out a season, I think is stupid, and I think it's sort of like a career suicide.
Yeah, but Andrew, if you had a choice, and you're Jimmy Graham, and the Saints are offering you $60 million, 6 years, $25 million guaranteed, or you play on the franchise tag. What do you do?
Well, it depends. It depends. You know, I mean, if he gets franchised, then it's going to go to arbitration, and then we'll decide. Arbitrator will decide whether it's he's a tight end or a receiver. You know,
and I think he'll win that battle.
I don't know about that. I think. He went to the Pro Bowl as a tight end. So I mean, I think that's a strong argument in favor of him being a tight end. The fact that he was elected to the Pro Bowl at that position.
He was elected to the Pro Bowl at that position because that's the position he's listed on the depth chart. If there was an arbitration for deciding on what position he should be elected to the Pro Bowl, I think he would have won that arbitration and he would have been on the Pro Bowl team as a wide receiver. The CBA clearly states it's whatever position the player took the most snaps at. He did not take the most snaps as an inline tight end last season. He did not.
I mean, Dave, I see your argument.
It's clear as day, in my opinion.
But as a Saints fan, I'm selfish. I don't want him to be.
I don't either. But unfortunately, the Saints don't revolve around my opinion or your opinion.
Well, that I mean, Dave, that sets a dangerous precedent. And I know there's 7 tight ends in the NFL that had a higher percentage of snaps than Jimmy Graham. Outsider in the slot. He's not even the tight end that had the most, the quote-unquote tight end that had the most percentage of his snaps in the slot. Like Tony Gonzalez had more, Dennis Pitta had more. So if all of a sudden, it's kind of a double-edged sword if you think about it, because if all of a sudden these guys are deemed quote unquote wide receivers, then a guy like Dennis Pitta, pretty good tight end, he is not going to get paid shit if he's a quote unquote wide receiver. On the flip side, a guy like Jimmy Graham probably commands more money as a quote unquote wide receiver on the open market than he would as a tight end. But it's a dangerous precedent to set, because this doesn't just affect Jimmy Graham. All of a sudden you've got six or seven players that are more of a quote unquote wide receiver than Jimmy Graham is. And you've got a list of a slew of about 15 other guys that are kind of in line with Jimmy Graham's numbers in terms of percentage of snaps, not at tight end. So I think the Saints are going to argue that the definition of tight end these days, look around the league, it's not just Jimmy Graham, it's every quote unquote tight end, that is the modern NFL. They take snaps at other areas, not just on the line of scrimmage.
All right. We're at over an hour. So Kevin, I will start this question with, we'll end on this question. Jimmy Graham, does he get a deal done or is he franchise tagged?
Tagged.
Andrew?
Tagged as receiver or tight end?
Doesn't matter. Tag. Just he doesn't get a deal done. He's either.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Kevin. Well, I think he'll get tagged, and then I think he'll end up signing. I do believe they'll sign a long-term deal. He'll get tagged, and then but they'll negotiate a contract. It'll be exactly like how the Drew Brees thing played out.
And yep. Dave.
I agree with Andrew.
I disagree with all you people. They're going to get the deal done before they put the tag on him. They're going to surprise us all.
My ass.
And we're going to all hail Loomis.
No, my ass, that's happening.
Yeah.
I'm going
to Loomis doesn't pay anybody until he absolutely has to. If you don't think that Loomis is going to franchise tag him and see if he can get away with paying Jimmy Graham a tight end franchise tag, then you're out of your mind, because that's exactly what Loomis is going to want to do. He's going to, and as a Saints fan, Ralph, then that you should be happy, because he's going to try and get Graham as cheap as possible.
I know. History says the Saints will do all their free agent moves and sign Graham last, because that's what they did with Breeze. But I'm just telling you, they're going to do it different this time. And I'll be wrong, and you can mock me, or I'll be right, and I'll play your soundbite back.
Ralph, I'll give you the old Jim Haslett adage that I will bet my life that Jimmy Graham will not sign a long-term deal before he gets franchised. Much like Jim Haslett bet his life that John Carney would never miss a kick. And when he was asked by the media after John Carney missed the extra point, he said, yeah, I'd be a dead man right now.
Hey, people, you got to donate. We need funds. Make a donation, $1, $5, whatever. Make the donation, because we need funds so you can have bandwidth, so you can hear Kevin wash his hands in crystal clear sound, or fix a transmission or whatever the hell he did tonight, quote unquote.
Bang pots and pans.
Yeah, bang pots and pans. So go to Saints Nation. Andrew's got free agency breakdown of some guy writing for his sites. I've never heard of him. I think it's just a pseudo name that Andrew uses.
Murphy. It's Murph.
It's Murph. Murph. Oh, Jesus.
I heard Murph is now writing for the Falcons.
Oh, of course.
We've covered this already, Dave.
Yeah, I know. I was there. I just wanted to talk about it again.
And Dave's got fantastic things going on Canal Street Chronicles, like Over the Cap and other fun sites that he points out that I can spend time at work not doing.
You know, one thing I'll say about Murph, if he was a Falcons fan all along and his only end game about writing for the Saints was to troll us for a few months, that's pretty good.
Well played. Well played, Murph.
Pretty solid.
You got us.
Well played. Well
you
played.
You got us, Murph.
And Kevin, after wrestling a baby, is going to do an off-season power ranking.
Yeah.
But actually, well, no, we have to wait till the off-season starts and transact.
Oh, yeah.
After
I'm done eating this pizza, I'm going to wrestle my dog. My dog's looking up at me like, "Hey, can I get some attention, please?"
He's going to power.
You're on the phone with those assholes. How about some attention here?
So go to Saints Nation. Go to Canal Street Chronicles.
I resemble that remark.
And we have a long off-season, people, because the draft ain't till May.
Oof.
So,
great job, Goodell.
Great job. Kevin, hit the water and get us out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Hit the water. It's warm.
All right, people, be safe. So long.
Johnny. Michael Sam's dad's terrible.
His dad is terrible.